About 2 years before I began, before I opened my hospital, I had a call from a white dentist that went something like this. Quote, Dr. Quigley, I have a good colored dentist here in my office who is thinking about starting his practice in Tarboro, period. I understand that he finished dentistry at the Howard University Dental School. He took the examination of the dental board here in North Carolina, and I understand from the count of the board of examiners that he had the highest marks of any of the fellows taking the dental examination, period. You know one thing, Dr. Quigley? Question mark. We need a good colored dentist in this town more than we need anything else right now, period. Unquote. I lost no time going to the dentist's office to meet Dr. Ray, period. Dr. Ray informed me that he finished dentistry in the same class with my brother-in-law, Dr. Frederick Gordon, who later went to Auburn in New York to practice, period. Dr. Ray informed me further that he and Fred had served in the Dental Corps of the United States Army during World War II, period. I welcomed Dr. Ray to our town and assured him that I would do everything that I could to help him get established here, period. Dr. Ray began his practice in two rooms of his home, period. I offered him space in the hospital that I was building. He would have a large operating room. He would have use of all my facilities, such as utilities for light and heat and telephone, period. As to what he would have to pay, comma, I would charge him $30 per month for the first 6 months. And after the first 6 months, he would have to pay $60 per month, period. He thought the arrangement was satisfactory and agreed to my offer, period. I went ahead and roughed R-U-G-H-E-D in the necessary water and drainage connections that he would need, along with the necessary cables for power to his dental unit, period. Now, comma, when I got further along in my plans, I saw the need for more space for myself, period. However, I had made the offer to Dr. Ray, and I was resigned to stand by my commitment, period. Now, comma, I was not the only person who had welcomed Dr. Ray to Tarboro. Some of the older citizens welcomed him also, period. Dr. Ray joined one of the local churches and began to take part in the ongoing civic activities among our people, period. When we were well along in the construction of the building, and after I had roughed in the necessary changes that dental unit would require, the good doctor called me one day, informing me that he thought over our plan. However, he felt that it was all right for me to charge him $30 a month for the first 6 months, but he felt that I would be charging him too much to ask him to pay $60 a month after the first 6 months, period. For the life of me, I could not understand why he would not accept the offer that I had made him, period. In our phone conversation, I went over every step of the agreement, including the fact that he would not have to pay for any utilities, He would not have to pay for a receptionist during the time that he was in my building. He still insisted that $60 per month would be too much for him to pay, period. I explained it to him that I had promised to give him every assistance that I could when he came to Tarboro, and that I stood by my commitment. However, he insisted that he could not come into my building with the financial arrangement that I had set forth, period. By that time, I could plainly understand that some of the older residents of Tarboro had warned Dr. Ray to steer clear of me, and that I would probably do him more harm than good, period. I had no ulterior motives in mind, and while I regretted his decision to turn down my offer, I looked toward his refusal as a way for me to get out of my commitment, period. Two or three years later, a two-story building was constructed in East Tarboro, in which he was able to obtain facilities that would be suitable to his needs insofar as a dental office was concerned, period. It is to be remembered that I gave up the idea of trying to help the people in this community when the older citizens went out of their way to counteract every proposal that I made to the city commissioners and to go contrary to everything that I tried to advance, period. However, Dr. Ray joined the Civic League and began advancing his ideas. Now the people of the community had witnessed my struggles, and they had seen further that without leadership, they were unable to make any advances. And when Dr. Ray came along, he was quickly elevated to a position of leadership, period. Under his leadership, the organization became known as East Tarboro Citizen League, period. He received better cooperation from the people than I had ever achieved. And under his leadership, he was able to mold the East Tarboro Citizen League into a very effective organization that has been able to improve the lot of colored black people to a great extent, period. For many years now, Dr. Ray has been city commissioner, period. He has served as mayor pro tem for several years, period. A few years ago, a drive was initiated to have Tarboro designated as Sylvia. I'll leave a blank here about a half a line, period. And we proceed as this way. Dr. Ray was one of the leading figures in having the town so designated, period. He acted as spokesman to the national committee that awarded and made such awards, period. He made several trips to Washington, D.C. In an effort to achieve that award, period. And in 19 liter space there, Tarboro was designated as liter space there about half a line, period. The housing situation, especially in Tarboro, was deplorable, especially in, related as was related to the elderly people and low-income families, period. Dr. Ray, comma, through his church affiliation, was able to influence the government to erect some apartments to house those needy individuals. The apartments are known as the Panola Heights, leaving a space there, so I get to end that, finish that out too. Because of his efforts and his persistence, many families now have a decent place to live, period. In 19 Little Space there, he was appointed a member of the Sylvia. Right here, I'm going to leave it right. We're going to stop talking about Dr. Ray right here. I'm going to make an insert to take care of what I have to say about him, period. Now, I'm going back to my story again. To start out by saying this, Dr. Ray was unable to influence the situation so far as the schools are concerned, period. And inasmuch as my children were growing up, and I know that they would have to go to school in this environment, I had gotten bitten one time and I decided not to do anything further insofar as the schools were concerned, period. Helen and Milton Jr. were growing up. There was no such thing as kindergarten in this area. When they became 3 and 4 years of age, respectively, we enrolled them in a little private school that was run by Mrs. Weston, W-S-T-O-N, the wife of the black priest of the Evangelist Space Episcopal Church, period. Mrs. Weston's father had served as priest for that church for many years. When he died, Mrs. Weston's husband succeeded him as priest in this area, period. Mrs. Weston had been a teacher all of her life, and she continued to teach in a private school known as the Perry School, P-E-R-R-Y school, period. All the people who could afford it sent their children to Mrs. Weston's school for early training, period. She gave kindergarten instruction and elementary school instructions to the second or third grade, period. It goes without saying that the children under her influence were very well prepared when they made the transition to the public schools, period. In fact, our two children were enrolled in the second grade of the public schools when they left Ms. Weston's tutelage, period. I remember that Milton Jr. was enrolled in the second grade, and he was much younger than his classmates, period. One of his classmates, comma, 2 years older than he, had a habit of jumping on his back and throwing him to the ground and engaging in a tussle. Of course, being 2 years older than Milton, he would win every time, period. Milton confided in me one day that he was getting tired of this classmate engaging in a tussle with him every time he came out of the classroom, period. I told him, quote, "Milton, you'll have to take care of that situation yourself." He said, quote, "Daddy, he's bigger than I am and older than I am, and he's stronger than I am. I can't do a thing but just fall over on the ground." I said, "Well, tell you what you do, bruh. I will call him brother and B-R-O. I said, next time you, tomorrow when you go down there, you get you a stick and lean it right against the wall. And when he jumps on you and throw you to the ground, do the best you can. But when you get up, you reach over and get that stick and whop him right across his head. He said, but Daddy, if I hit him, he gonna fight me. He'll be whipping me. He'll whip me then. I said, Milton, if you hit him right, if you hit him hard enough across his head, he ain't gonna do a thing but grin and walk off. He said, well, you told me to do it, Daddy. I'm gonna do that. About 3 days later, he came home from school. He came right on down to the office, during my office hours. He said, Daddy, I want to talk to you a minute. I said, what's happened? He said, I did just what you told me. I hit that boy right across his head. He didn't get to do a thing but get up and rub his head and grin. I said, well, bro, that's the way it's going to have to be. You'll have to look after yourself these days. And if you find that they're too strong for you, you got to have a way to circumvent that strength and come out on top. Period. I think I'll stop here for the night. Period. I sat in my car all that afternoon. I sat in my car until he finished plowing up the entire plot. And I saw to it that the potatoes were divided equally. I changed my mind about my good tenant and saw to it that he was off the farm the very next year, period. About 2 years later, I saw another farm advertised in the just adjacent to the farm that I had bought. The farm comprised about 600 acres. I was not prepared to take on 600 more acres. However, I did agree to buy two-thirds of the farm, period. The man who was selling the farm had to declare bankruptcy because of poor management. You see, this man was a carpenter who had moved to North Carolina from the Midwest, period. And he tried to farm the same way they did in the Midwest. In fact, I was talking to him one day, and he said that, these rebels don't know how to farm around here. I'm going to show them something. I'm going to farm just as we do out in Illinois and Indiana. You're going to see a hell of a difference, period. Well, comma, I did see a hell of a difference. In 2 years, he had to declare bankruptcy because of the fact that instead of raising cotton, peanuts, and tobacco, he had put his entire crop in oats and wheat, period. There was no market around here for oats and wheat, period. He lost his shirt. I felt sorry for the poor man. He had put his life savings into the farm and lost everything he owned in an effort to show these rebels how to manage a farm, period. I bought the two-thirds of the farm, including the house in which he was living, period. I was able to add another tenant, period. Just about that time that I decided to add chickens and beef cattle to my farming operations, period. I was not making much money because I had to learn the hard way. I was not raised on a farm, but I enjoyed the learning. I enjoyed seeing crops grow, and I enjoyed helping my tenants to achieve a better life, period. Everything went fairly well with us, period. The children were growing up and enjoying the freedom to run and play and discover the pleasures of farm life. Although we lived in Carver in town, period. When Helen was about 4 years old, we were driving through town one day. We passed the swimming pool. That is the one pool in town that was added for whites only, period. We passed the pool. Helen saw the kids diving in and swimming. She said, Daddy, what are they doing over there? I said, they're swimming. That's a swimming pool. And she enjoyed watching the kids for a couple of days. When I finished work in the afternoon, I said, Daddy, come on, let's go watch them swim. We go back and watch the swimming for an hour or so, and then we go home and have dinner. Finally, she said, Daddy, I want to go swimming over there. I turned around to her. I hate to tell the facts of life, but I had to tell her. Quote, Helen, come, you can't swim over there. Why? Quote, Helen this time, why can't I swim over there, Daddy? Unquote. I answered, I want to see white children and adults and grown folks over there. No place for colored children to swim. She said, well, I want to swim anyhow. Okay, well, I said, I replied, quote, I guess I'll have to build you a swimming pool in the country. He grabbed that right, oh, goody, goody, Daddy wants to build us a swimming pool in the country. What do you think about that, little brother? Brother, about 3 years old, all he could say, I'd be glad too. They ran me right up the wall right then and there. I had to provide a swimming pool in the country. Now come, I had never built a swimming pool. And I was, when I inquired around as to what it would cost to build a swimming pool, I sort of drew back. Then one day, Helen said, when are we going to build a pool? And I said, well, I don't know, it'll be 2 or 3 years before I get to that. Well, I want a swimming pool right now. Why can't you build it? I thought about that. She said, why can't you build it, unquote. I thought about it a couple of days, and I said to myself, why can't I build a damn doggone swimming pool, period. There was nobody in this area who had built a swimming pool, however. I had some ideas as to how one should go about it. First of all, I picked a site in the wooded portion of my farm. I cut down big pine trees in the area and changed the trees for the lumber that I would need to build a pool from Henderson Lumber Company here in Tarboro, period. The area which I had picked was a little bit low, not exactly swampy, but low, period. I had my tenant attach an earth moving scoop behind the tractor and dig a hole in the ground, period. At first I thought about a swimming pool 16 feet wide and 30 feet long, period. As I got further into the project, I realized the 16 feet wide was all right, but the 30 feet long was not quite long enough. So our excavation was extended 30 more feet, period. I had the tenants shape the size of the excavation to make them perpendicular. I had a bricklayer who was familiar with building concrete farms to construct the farms, lining the excavation, period. Next in order was to obtain mixed concrete, was poured so that all four sides of the pool were poured at the same time. However, I made one big mistake right here and right then. right then and there, period. We poured the sides first, and after the sides were poured, the farms removed, we poured the bottom, period. That was a big, big, big mistake. I had two shallow wells dug to supply water for the pool and installed electric pumps, period. In less than a month, Helen and Bruh were swimming in our new pool in the country, period. I was glad to have it because way back in my mind, I always had a fear that sooner or later, my children might drown because they had been properly instructed in swimming. And knowing boys, knowing what boys would do, how they would sneak off and swim in the river, every year, two or three of them would be drowned in swimming in the river, period. With a pool of our own, my wife being a good swimmer, me, just a fair swimmer, we were able to get them started swimming at an early age, period. About the latter part of August that year, a drought came along. The water table in the soil dropped to such low level that my shallow wells could not furnish water to fill the pool, period. Next step was to have a well digger to come out and dig me a deep well. That is one he dug down 113 feet. Dug down until he reached white sand, S-A-N-D, period. I had to install different pumps then. The next problem was that of sand being pumped from the well into the swimming pool. Corrected that problem by installing two separate settling basins at the shallow end of the pool so that as the water was pumped from the well, it flowed into the faced basin where most of the sand dropped to the bottom. From the face basin to the second basin where the remainder of the sand dropped to the bottom before the water overflowed into the swimming pool, period. Inasmuch as it was a private pool and we were able to control the contamination with the chlorine in powdered form, we were reasonably safe from contamination, period. I built a shelter at one end of the pool where we could go in the event it rained or the sun became too hot, and where we could have our little picnic type lunches and dinners, period. The following year, we gave a 4th of July picnic and invited our friends from the surrounding area, period. Of course, we were raising hogs, cattle, and chickens for the barbecue type pool party. Didn't cost me much, only the inconvenience of getting everything ready for our guests, period. We had barbecue chicken and choice steaks. And for those of us who liked this delicious Eastern Carolina barbecued pork, one pig sufficed the first year, period. Next year, we had about a 4th of July picnic. We invited about twice as many friends as we did for the first one, period. The word spread around, it was a good time everybody was having, And by the third year, my good friends asked for invitations. Not only for themselves, but for their friends. Result of that, we had over 300 guests for our third year, our third picnic year. It goes without saying that everybody had a good time except those of us who had to prepare the picnic period. I said to Helen, this darn thing is getting out of hand. We just got to stop this picnic business. Because the third year we had to barbecue two hogs, killed about 20 chickens, barbecue I don't know how many steaks, period. Now let me back up here a minute. After the pool was in operation for 1 year, the shed that I had built at the end of the pool was inadequate. So we built a recreation house at one end of the pool, period. It was consisted of a large kitchen with a dining area and a larger recreation room, period. At one end of the room, I had a bar, so that those of my friends who liked to indulge in spirits would make them say we could make merry, period. During the third, when we had the 4th of July picnic for the third year, some of my good friends came in, looked around, and said, "Quick, when are you going to build some sleeping rooms out here? As soon as you build them, I'm coming out and spend 2 weeks. Well, I had thought about adding some bedrooms, but when I got an idea of what was in store for me, I told my good friend that we're just going to stop at this right here, but later on we may add the sleeping rooms. In the meantime, I had some rollaway beds out there so that whenever we felt like two or three days in the country, just roll out the bed, sleep, get up in the morning, have our breakfast. I could I'd go on to work, come back in the afternoon, after my afternoon office hour, and have dinner, have a swim, dinner, and a nap, prepare for the night office hour, period. So my good friend suggested that I hurry and build the sleeping rooms. I decided never would I build a sleeping room. Because I knew that if I had built sleeping rooms out there, it'd be too inviting to all my friends from near and far and near. There would be little time left for us to utilize the facility for ourselves, period. I did not have a picnic the 4th year. I did not send out any invitations. And we didn't have a big spread that day. But believe it or not, 4 families came out with all the kids expecting a picnic. They were very much disappointed. I had not forgotten the aftermath of the last picnic. Everybody had a good time except my wife and my children and myself. We had waked the heck out of the tenants getting ready for that picnic, and I said, the hell with it from here on out, period. While I'm on the subject of the swimming pool, Carol came along. She was about 5 years behind Milton, Brud, we called him. She was about 6 months old, and she was playing around at the end of the pool and fell in, period. Looked around and saw these big eyes looking right up from the bottom of the pool. I yanked her out, wiped her face, and put her back in the pool. I didn't want her to become afraid. I didn't want to have any fear of water. However, part of that mishap, I petitioned off about 3 feet at the end, at the shallow end of the pool, so that Carol could have a splashing area, period. We taught her to swim in that shallow approaching the pool. Before the year was over, she insisted upon going into the deeper portion of the pool. Helen, my wife, flew over there and followed her. And Carol swam from one end of the pool to the other. And from that time on, we weren't bothered about looking out for them. They could look out for themselves, period. My kids really did enjoy that pool. His brother, Milton, our brother we call him, brother and Carol, would dive into the pool, go to the bottom, swim the bottom of the pool until they had to come up for air. They get a deep breath, back down to the bottom of the pool. They would come up, go down just like a porpoises. Helen, on the other hand, did not like to get her hair wet. She learned to swim with her head above water just like a turtle, period. Now to go back to the mistake I made in building the pool. Remember I said that we pulled the sides, removed the forms, and then pulled the bottom of the pool. That was a serious error because it left a space between the bottom of the pool and the side of the pool. Eventually, water began to seep out of the pool whenever we filled it, period. About 3 days, about one-third of the water will have seeped out of the pool, period. When we emptied the pool to clean it, the groundwater would seep into the pool to the level, same level that the groundwater in the surrounding area was on the outside of the pool. In other words, we had to keep filling the pool every day in order to keep it from seeping out to the extent that we wouldn't be able to use it properly, period. We were able to use the pool until the children left home, however. Helen, my wife, had a pool constructed by a company that specialized in building swimming pools in our backyard, period. Now, to get back to my story, I go back to Nashville, Tennessee to attend the Harry Medical College. We start out by saying, during the time that I worked as a sleeping car porter in Chicago, I came in contact with many medical and dental students who attended the Harry Medical College. I had to listen at length to their description and accounts of their medical studies at Harry, and I came to know almost firsthand the different teachers, their mannerisms, their good points, and what was considered by the students their bad points, period. I decided, after listening to these medical students over a period of time, that the Harry Medical College must not have been such a bad place after all, period. With that frame of mind, I boarded the train for Nashville, along with several medical students, period. There was another incoming freshman with me by the name of Seabrooks. Well, Seabrooks had not had the benefit of a pre-med course. However, he had finished college at one of the schools in the Nashville vicinity, and had obtained a Bachelor of Science degree and had been exposed to some chemistry, some physics, and a smattering of biology, period. Inasmuch as he had been around Nashville 4 years, his assistance was invaluable to me when it came to finding a place to reside when I got there, period. Seabrooks knew one of the small neighborhood merchants who lived near Meharry Medical College. And inasmuch as this man had a large rambling house, and inasmuch as all of his children were gone, grown and gone, we made a beeline for the house and asked this man whether he would be willing to rent rooms to incoming medical students, period. As much as pickings were pretty slim along about 1929, the man and his wife agreed to take us on as roomers, period. They showed us a large room, which seemed to have been very comfortable. The bed seemed to have been all right. Mattresses were firm and not lumpy. And then as much as this merchant operated a small grocery and market, we were assured of having at least ample meals, period. The merchant also sold C-O-A-L as a sideline during the winter, period. Thus, we were assured of having a warm room, period. He found two of his other friends who were looking for a room also, and the room accommodated the four of us without any crowding, period. The rate for room and board was $25 per month. Parenthesis, try that at this day and time. Close the parenthesis, period. Another paragraph. The next morning, we arose, had a good breakfast, and were at Meharry Medical College at 8 o'clock for our first assignments, period. Now, it is time to talk about Meharry Medical College, period. First of all, why the name Meharry, M-E-H-A-R-R-Y? Question mark. I shall relate the story to you just as it was told to me some years ago, period. Another paragraph here. 15 or 20 years previous to the founding of Meharry, there were five Irish brothers who operated a farm in southern Indiana, period. You must remember that at that day and time, there was no such thing as refrigeration, period. One of the most important commodities, especially in the farming area, was salt, S-A-L-T, period. One of the Meharry brothers had gone to the nearby town to get the year's supply of salt that would enable them to preserve the meats, kindred products from the farm for use during the winter months, period. On his way back to the farm, drawn wagon and his load of salt, he encountered a great storm, period. Now you know that if salt is allowed to get wet, especially in a downpour, much of it would be lost, period. As he drove along, his team got mired, M-I-R-E-D, in a muddy road, and all that he could think of was the salt that he was carrying home and the likelihood of its being ruined, period. He looked around and saw a slave cabin close by, period. The slave came to the door of the cabin and saw the man in his distress, saw him trying to urge his team along to get the mired wagon going. And the slave came out to help the man. He hitched other horses to the wagon and pulled it out of the mire and pulled it under a shelter, thereby saving the salt, period. He asked no compensation in return, period. The Meharry brother was so impressed with the willingness of the slave to help him that he vowed someday, in some way, he would do something to help the enslaved people, period. Now, come back to George Whipple Hubbard. This young officer had witnessed the pitiful state of the recently freed slaves, and after he received his medical degree from Vanderbilt University, he offered his services to the Methodist Episcopal Church to develop a medical department at Central Tennessee College, which was under the auspices of the Methodist Church, to train Negroes for the practice of medicine, period. Now, come here is where the Meharry brothers come in. When the Methodist Church sent out a call for funds to establish the school, the five Meharry brothers gave $15,000 to the church for the establishment of the school, period. It was at that time that Dr. Hubbard heard of the Meharry brothers' bequest, period. And he suggested that the school be named Meharry Medical College in grateful appreciation to the Meharry brothers who had donated the first monies for the establishment of the school, period. So Meharry opened in 1876 as a medical department of Central Tennessee College with Dr. George Whipple Hubbard as dean and faculty, period. Name was changed to Meharry Medical College of Walden University in 1900, and with the decline of Walden University, has had a separate corporate existence since October 13, 1915, period. Now, comma, to bring you up to date as to the physical plant, when I enrolled at Meharry, 1929, there was an administration building, which housed the offices of the president, the dean, and some classrooms. Next to it was the Anderson Anatomical Hall, which was donated to the school by a graduate by the name of Anderson, who had settled in Texas and done quite well as a surgeon, period. A third building housed a small auditorium on the first floor and the physiology department on the second floor, period. There was another building farther along on the same side of the street that housed the department of bacteriology and the school of pharmacy, period. On the opposite side of the street, there was the farmer home of Dr. George W. Hubbard, which housed the graduate nurses, period. Next line was the George W. Hubbard Hospital. And on the corner, directly across from the administration building, was the School of Dentistry, period. All of the buildings heretofore mentioned were of solid brick construction. Period. There was a home for undergraduate nurses adjacent to the campus. Period. As to the members of the faculty, comma, Dr. John J. Maloney, M-U-L-L-O-W-N-E-Y, was president and professor of public health and hygiene, period. There was Dr. L-E-S-T-E-R, who was head of the Department of Physiology and also acted as dean of the school, period. Dr. V.G. Talbert, T-O-L-B-E-R-T, was professor of anatomy. Dr. M.W. Bent was professor of bacteriology. Dr. L.E.A.G.U.E. was professor, head of the department of histology, period. Dr. W. S. Quinlan, Q-U-I-N-L-A-N, was head of the Department of Pathology, an associate professor, Dr. C-U-F-F, period. Dr. M. W. Bent was head of the Department of Bacteriology. Mr. H. H. Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S, taught biochemistry. Dr. C. V. Roman, R-O-M-A-N-S, was the head of the Department of Eye, Ear, Nose, and Throat. Dr. W. E. A. Ford, as associate professor in that department, period. Dr. D. R. Neal, comma, a white physician of Nashville, Tennessee, was head of the Department of Internal Medicine, period. Dr. John H. Hale, John Henry Hale, was professor and head of the Department of Surgery. Dr. T-U-R-P-I-N was dean of the School of Dentistry. And Dr. B-A-I-N-E-S was dean of the School of Pharmacy, period. All of these men were learned, dedicated physicians. Their soul in the teaching of medicine and surgery to the eager young men and women who made up the student body of Meharry Medical College, period. I might add here that Dr. C. Victor Romans, R-O-M-A-N-S, was also one of the founders of the National Medical Association, which exists, E-X-I-S-T-S, I guess, to the present day as a forum of the dissemination of medical information to the black physicians and surgeons, as well as a mouthpiece of the black medical profession in all matters scientific, political, otherwise, that in which the black physician is involved, period. There was quite a contrast between the campus of Meharry Medical College and the modernistic building in which Northwestern University Medical School was housed. However, I was not looking at the type of building at high school. I was looking forward to obtaining a medical education that I could use the treatment of my patients, period. Make a paragraph right here. On a bright September morning in 1929, the incoming class of 1933 assembled in a small lecture room on the second floor of the administration building, period. As I looked around, I recognized one member of the incoming class by the name of Don, D-O-N, Watkins, W-A-T-K-I-N-S, who had been a classmate of mine at Alcorn, period. I was surprised to see Watkins, inasmuch as when we were students together at Alcorn, he was studying agriculture with the purpose of returning to Sunflower County, Mississippi, and helping the farmers, period. There were three or four fellows from Morehouse College in Atlanta, Georgia, about two from California. There were four students from Texas, two cousins, and two sisters, period. There were four fellas from North Carolina, and one student from Kenneth Square, K-E-N-N-E-T-H, Square, S-Q-U-A-R-E, Pennsylvania, who later became my buddy. The remainder of the class was made up of students from various colleges, mostly in the southern portion of the United States, period. Dr. Maloney, the president, greeted us, and in his remarks, he stated that Meharry Medical College was organized and established in order to educate promising Negro students for the treatment and care of Negroes, primarily located in the southern part of the United States, period. He took pains to point out the paucity of black physicians in such states as Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas, period. He wished us all Godspeed, period.
I was persuaded to go out and see this gentleman, period. When I was shown the way to his home, I found three little girls and one little boy running around playing in the yard. It was a simple four-room, what you might call T-N-N-A-N-T house, period. One of the children took me to the room where I found the gentleman lying in bed, apparently in a lot of pain, period. I introduced myself to the Reverend, period. He began to tell me about himself. Of course, I'd heard already about his activities in the educational field, in the field of education. However, I was very deeply touched when he told me of the incidents that led up to his present condition, period. First of all, his first wife had died some years previously, and he had married a younger woman to the union, were born three girls and one boy, period. After the birth of the fourth child, he began to have this arthritic involvement. To make bad matters worse, his wife became sick and died, period. Here was this elderly man, left with four young children and nobody to look after any of them, period. And the kindly neighbors brought him food and gave him whatever medical attention that they could, period. As long as he was able to travel, they took him to the physicians in the surrounding area and paid for his treatment. However, within the last 8 or 10 months, the man had become completely bedridden, period. He was entirely dependent upon his neighbors to look after him and to feed and clothe his family, period. He turned to me and said, "Doctor, I have no money to offer you, to give you. But if you could do something to get me out of this bed, you'll never hear the last of it." I said, "Okay, Reverend. I understand you've been having it pretty rough, and I'm going to be hard on you about the money. I'll take it upon myself to find time to get out here as often as I can and do what I can for you," period. I examined the gentleman and found him to be very weak. He had lost a lot of weight. His musculature had just about completely disappeared. Knees were drawn up. He couldn't straighten his legs out, period. Both arms were flexed midway between extension and complete contraction, period. He was unable to extend his arms, period. His spine was involved. He was unable to turn his head from side to side, period. He was dependent on neighbors to come in 2 or 3 times a day to change his position, to cook for his children, and to keep him as clean as he possibly could, period. Start treating the good Reverend, even furnishing the medication. I got out to see him as often as I could. After about 3 or 4 weeks, pain had subsided to such an extent that I could instruct his neighbors in the fundamentals of passive exercises for the man. Period. After about 6 weeks of treatment, he was able to sit up without severe pain, period. After 2 months, neighbors were able to bring him to my office for further treatment, period. The Reverend continued to improve to the extent that he was able to walk with assistance, period. Later, he was able to walk with a crutch. It was then that he begged his neighbors to take him to church. They took the Reverend to church, and he sat up in the pulpit and started preaching again, period. He would always end his sermon by saying, "If you're sick, you go see that Dr. Quakers over there in Tarboro, and he will get you going again," just as he got me going. One day he came to my office and picked up a handful of my business cards. And one of his church members came in the next week and told me, "You know one thing?" And said, quote, "You know one thing? Reverend Riddick started passing out your cards just like somebody dealing cards in a poker game," unquote. Well, the publicity did not do me any harm whatsoever. In fact, it increased my practice about 20%, period. To tell you the truth, I think my treatment of Reverend Riddick was the best investment I've ever made in my life, period. Paragraph here. My phone rang about 2 o'clock one morning, found a man on the other end, just about incoherent, telling me, yelling, quote, "Doctor, please come see by my wife, hyphen. She's having a baby and she's about to bleed to death here. The baby's here, but she's still about to bleed to death. I wish you would come out here and please try to do something for her," period. I dressed hastily and drove out to the man's home, which was about 6 miles from town, period. I found the room full of neighboring women, and the woman lying in bed gasping, and there was blood everywhere, period. As I understood the situation, this was her first pregnancy. She had very strong pains. And when the baby was finally born, she had a severe pain that just ruptured everything, period. She had what we would call a third degree laceration, period. She had extended deep in her pelvis, period. First thing that I had to do was to stop the bleeding, which was simple, just a simple packet. I called the hospital, but there was no room for the patient. I called my receptionist and had her to come on out and bring two cans of ether, period. This was an emergency situation, and I had no time to think about sterility or anything else, inasmuch as it was impossible to get the patient into a hospital, period. Luckily, there was the patient, they had electricity in the house. It was necessary, however, for me to have them put out all the fires to prevent explosion, inasmuch as I was using ether, which is very high, is a very high explosive, period. I repaired the lacerations as well as I could. There was no thought of blood transfusion. We just had to just depend on nature to keep the lady alive, period. Luckily, the patient survived. However, one portion of the wound did not heal completely, period. It was then that I wrote a letter to Dr. F. Bayard Carter, F-B-A-Y-A-R-D-C-A-R-T-E-R, professor of gynecology at Duke University Hospital, explaining the situation. He gave me an appointment for the lady, and I sent her to Duke, period. He examined the lady and immediately called me on the telephone. Quote, "Dr. Quigley, how in the world did you ever have that laceration in the country in an unsterile environment and get the type of result that you did? Just how in the world that ever happened? I've never heard of anything like this before." Period. Continued quotes. I'm going to keep this nice lady over here and finish this job for you. And I want to tell you right now, if you run into anything like this again, you can't get any help locally. You just load the patient up and send them all over here to me. By golly, I'll attend to it." Unquote. That incident was marked the beginning of a friendship between Dr. Carter and myself that lasted until his untimely demise, period. Now, come as to the patient, I was able to deliver 3 babies for her before I insisted upon tubal ligation, period. Another paragraph here. In those days, Eastern North Carolina was primarily, and especially our area, was primarily an agricultural area, period. And we had the county fairs, as it had in all the other counties in this area, period. The farmers exhibited their prized livestock, samples of the field crops, chickens, turkeys, etc. The women exhibited their needlecraft, their products of their canning endeavors, etc., etc. It was with the fair as it was with everything else in this area. The white farmers exhibited their wares in a big pavilion, in a large pavilion. However, there was space set aside in a smaller building for the blacks to their exhibits on view, period. The American Missionary Association had established a normal school about 15 miles from Tarboro at a community near Enfield, North Carolina. The school was known as the BRICS, B-R-I-C-K-S, Normal Institute, period. At that day and time, there were few, if any, high schools, and in order for a child to get high school education, they had to go to these normal institutes that were situated throughout the area, period. The American Missionary Association had gone to great expense to establish the school at BRICS, period. Several large buildings, including an administration building, a classroom building, and dormitories for men and women, along with teachers' cottages, period. The American Missionary Association had bought a large farm that was operated in connection with the school, period. And they had a resident manager of the farm by the name of Mr. Neil McLean, N-E-I-L, M-C-L-E-A-N, period. Mr. McLean was in Tarboro helping the black teachers and farmers arrange their exhibits, period. He became suddenly ill while helping the farmers and was rushed to my office, period. He complained of nausea and vomiting, dizziness, and a lot of abdominal pain, period. On questioning him, I found that he had left home early in the morning, didn't have a chance to get his breakfast, had come to Tarboro and waited until about 2 p.m. before he had any food. He overate hot dogs, hamburgers, etc., etc., and developed a full-fledged case of indigestion, period. Of course, comma, he was very much frightened, period. I gave him some medication to relieve his indigestion, and I had him lie down in my office and rest for a while. He felt better, and I had let him go back to work, period. Mr. McLean never forgot that incident, period. By 1936, North Carolina Department of Education had gotten busy establishing high schools, at least two or three in each county, period. Students could get high school education near home, so that there was no further need for a boarding school in the BRICS community, period. However, the Halifax County Board of Education saw fit to continue to use the school facilities at BRICS as a community high school, as students from the neighboring town of Enfield could continue their education, period. As I have already stated, Mr. McLean was the farm manager, and he managed and looked after the buildings that were not occupied at that time. It was a boarding school, period. It was about that time that the federal government initiated a program of summer camps for black children from the ages of about 12 to 16 years, period. Luckily for our area, this camp, one of the camps was to be located at the BRICS complex, which was well suited to the type of program, inasmuch as they had dormitory facilities along with the dining facilities and plenty of space on the campus to carry out all the activities that were planned, period. A black supervisor, comma, of Mrs. Y-N-C-Y, Mrs. Yancey, was to head the project, period. She selected several teachers in the community as her subordinates, period. Plan called for a full-time RN, registered nurse, along with a physician who would be on call, period. When McLean heard of the project, and when he was called upon to recommend the resignation of the position, he recommended me, period. Much to the chagrin of the black physicians in the area, inasmuch as I was the last physician to come to the area, period. They felt that one of their number should have been chosen, period. However, we set the wake, period. The children came in. I had to give them physical examinations, take care of their various complaints whenever they had them. I also had to administer typhoid vaccine, tetanus toxin, or tetanus vaccine. It was very easy for me to take on responsibilities, period. It was very seldom that I was called upon to make any emergency trips to the area, period. You know, comma, I got to thinking, period. Here were all these substantial brick buildings, sanitary facilities in place and intact, operational, not too far removed from a small town, on a paved highway, and in an area where we needed a hospital, period. We had a regional medical association where the doctors could meet monthly and discuss their problems, be treated to infections by authorities in different fields, period. I attended one of the meetings and I spoke to the organization and proposed that we as a group undertake to establish a hospital at Bricks, period. I was questioned at length by some of the other members. This question was, how would we finance a hospital, ? I answered that perhaps the American Missionary Association would help us in that area. I further stated that we could get off our butts and go to work in the community and try to raise enough money to open a hospital.